B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
All right, welcome in. It is Gasper and Murray. No Murray, Tim McCone in for Jim, but we do have Chris Gasper. Chris, how's it going?
Pretty good, McCone. What's up? How are you?
Pretty good. How about those Celtics? Don't let the Celtics get hot.
Yeah, don't let the Celtics get hot, man. I'm telling you. Yeah. I mean, both Jim and I thought they could win two games in this series. It wasn't looking good after the Brooklyn part, but now maybe they can still win two.
I'll be honest, I was on right after you guys last weekend with Leroy, and I was rolling my eyes when you guys said that you thought you could win two. I told Leroy there's no shot they win a game in this series.
Did you say that?
Yeah, I just I didn't think there was
mocking
any chance.
Gasper and
yeah.
Murray.
And I'll be honest with you, too. Like, even like with the probably like a minute 40 left in that game last night, I was like, don't love this spot right now for the Celtics. Don't feel super confident. But, yeah, they got it done last night. A huge game by Jason Tatum, obviously. And Marcus Smart turning into the most efficient player in basketball there in the third quarter,
playoff
too.
Playoff smart's a real thing. I mean, there is playoff smart. I mean, we saw it last year against Toronto. The only problem is that it tends to inflate him to the point where he thinks he can be playoff smart all the time, every game, and that's just not the case.
Yeah, exactly. So what's going to happen, right? He goes like 5 for 8 from three last night, and now tomorrow night he's going to go 1 for 13 from deep, and we're going to be like, oh, that's right. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. No, but a great night for the Celtics nonetheless. Do you think they actually have a chance in this series now, or do you think that this is kind of... Yeah.
No, I still think they're going to lose. I still think they're going to lose in six. I'll stick with that prediction. I think that they could tie this thing up on Sunday because Kyrie's obviously shook by the environment. I mean, you look at the way he... First of all, Kyrie Irving is a player, Tim, who's never lacked for confidence, and he was hesitating to take shots there in the first three quarters. He really was. Like, you could tell he didn't want to take the shot because he didn't want to miss, because he didn't want to hear it from the crowd. And I had said on Felger and Maz, those guys were saying Kyrie was going to soak it up and drop 50, a la Jason Tatum. And I said, no, I think he's going to be shook by the environment. Kyrie's one of those guys who says he wants the smoke, but he really doesn't want the smoke. He wants the love. He wants people to adore him. He wants adulation. He doesn't understand why you don't see things the way he sees them. And I thought he was definitely shaken by the environment last night with only 4,800 fans in the building. First three quarters, Tim, he's 4 for 13 for 8 points. He hit two threes in the fourth quarter and finished with 8 points in the fourth quarter. So he ends up being 6 for 17 for 16 points. But he was a complete passenger in that game.
So I agree with you 100%. I mean, you look at the way that he played last night, and obviously it was in his head big time in terms of the return to Boston. And I just look at his playoff performances over his career. And look, I know that he's known for the shot in the finals, and no one's going to take that away from him. But the way that he's performed in some of these big moments in terms of, you know, him being the guy hasn't been great in his career. And I know that he had checked out in the Milwaukee series. And I always go back to the back and forth that you had with him. What was that, after game four, I think it was?
I don't remember, but
it was like,
he made me do the math on the fly.
Like, right, okay.
He made me do the math on the fly, like in terms of, like, you know, I said, I remember the question was, have you ever gone through a stretch like this in the playoffs? He was like, what do you mean? And then I had to like quickly do the math in my head, and I forget what it was. It was like, I don't know, like something like ridiculous, like 20 of 65 or something. And he was like, who cares? That was his response.
Yes.
Who cares? Like, blah, blah, blah.
Like, well, you probably should, Kyrie. I'm just letting you know. But yeah, I'm with you. I thought the biggest takeaway last night was that I did not think Kyrie wanted any part of that game yesterday.
Did not. He absolutely did not. And I have a lot of respect for Kyrie as a player. And I even have respect for him as a person because I think, you know, as a minority, I think he tries to do a lot of good things for the community. And I appreciate that. He's far from perfect. He's one of those people who annoyingly thinks he's smarter than he really is. I've been accused of that in the past as well. So, you know, I can see where he gets under people's skin and he agitates people, but I have respect for him. But what you saw last night is why he can't have his own team. It's why when he left LeBron to come here, it didn't work out. It's why in Brooklyn, they wanted to make sure it wasn't just Kyrie. They wanted the tandem. They got Kyrie so they could get KD. That's the whole deal. This is why he will never be the alpha, the number one guy on his own team that wins a championship. Because the mental toughness, like a Kobe or a LeBron would have soaked that up and used it as fuel and fire to play a great game. You know, with Kyrie, it got into his head and he was hesitant to take shots, and it got him off his game.
Yeah, so I'm with you, and it's something that I've said really since his time in Boston when we saw it. He leaves LeBron,
yeah,
wants out of that situation, one of the two teams in the league that could win the championship at that point, right? Really, it was Warriors-Cavs during that like two or three year run.
Yeah, four straight finals.
And it probably should have been a red flag when he wanted off that team, and we heard the stories about how he wasn't talking to teammates during that playoff run for the first couple weeks, I forget, in his last season with Cleveland. Like, it's probably not great in terms of a leadership role. And then we saw it here in Boston, and I'm 100% with you. I think when you look at Kyrie, he is no doubt a top 10 talent in the NBA, but yes. I don't think you're ever going to be able to win a championship with him if he is your lead guy, the number one player on the team. And I think you saw that here in Boston. The problem is he's got two other guys that are probably top 10 players in Brooklyn right now. And you saw that last night too. Like, as bad as Kyrie played and as well as Jason Tatum played, and as well as I thought Tristan Thompson gave you an edge last night.
He really did.
You know, Kemba certainly didn't play that well.
Kemba was terrible. Again, which is the theme in this series. No, I'm not trying to pick on, I know you're a UConn guy. I'm not trying to pick on Kemba, but for them to have a chance in this series, he has to play better. I mean, 3-for-14 last night, again, another terrible game. They were able to get away with it because Tatum scored 50. Like, here's the thing. What a game by Tatum. I mean, unbelievable performance. And he certainly answered all the doubters. He answered, you know, people like Felger who were saying he had to step up. First two games of the series, he was only averaging 15.5 points per game and shooting a woeful 28% from the field. He lit it up last night. But the formula for the Celtics to win in the postseason can't be Jason Tatum scores 50. That's the only way they've won after the regular season ended. That's not sustainable. So you need more from Kemba. He has to be better than he's been in this series. And he's really been very poor in this series. You need more from him. It worked out last night because Kyrie was a dud. But the gap between Kyrie and Kemba in this series can't be what it's been. He has to close that gap.
Yeah, Kyrie had a bad game. Kemba was horrific. You got great performances from Tristan and Marcus Smart last night. But to your point, if you're not getting a solid performance from a guy that's making max money, that's not a recipe for success long term. And I think that's one of the biggest issues for the Celtics moving forward, because we've seen it with Kemba. At this point, you've gone through essentially two off seasons where it was when the NBA got shut down to when the bubble restarted, and from the bubble ending to him coming into this season late, you're talking about two extended periods off with that knee, and it still hasn't been right. And then this performance in this postseason, those last couple of years on this contract, not great for the Celtics. And I think that's one of the biggest things that you have to look at if you're Danny Ainge moving forward, saying, we got to do something about this. The good news is when you look at the NBA too, you can say contracts are untradeable. If John Wall got traded, you can probably find a landing spot for Kemba Walker.
True.
The bright spot is, to your point though, what Jason Tatum showed you last night is I really do think you have an elite building block here moving forward for the Celtics.
Yeah, no, Tatum, I was at the 62-point game. So I was at that game, and it was just incredible. And he's really sort of, not that I was anti-Jason Tatum, but before I was sort of like, hey, Tatum, Brown, you got to trade one of these guys potentially because they're on the same accomplishment timeline. And I was like, it doesn't really matter which one you trade. Now I look at it and I'm like, well, now I want to show a little more patience with both of them. But if I had to move one of them, it would be Brown, just because Tatum has an elite, elite, elite skill, and that's scoring. He can score at an elite level in this league, and that's really hard to find. So he's kind of won me over, convinced me that, you know, he is the building block. He's 23, he's young, he's growing. I think he's still growing into who he's going to be, not only as a player, Tim, but as a person. I still think, you know, his leadership leaves a little something to be desired, and, you know, enough of the whining to the officials. It's just, like, over the top. And even when he got poked in the eye in game two, the whole, well, I'm still trying to figure out, you know, superstars get those calls. I'm still trying to figure out how that works. And I'm like, oh, just with the refs, man. Like, can you just, like, chill, like, with the refs? You know, it's like the whole thing is, like, Tatum will be like, oh, I'm not a vocal leader. You know, I'm not vocal on the court. That's not my personality. And it's like, yeah, except for it's nonstop chatter and facial expressions to the officials. It's like, if you could take some of that to your teammates, that would be great. But I shouldn't be saying this the night after he dropped 50. That's just, you know, he can work on that. He can work on that. But he carried the team. And he was the best player. Think about this. He was the best player on the floor on a night where Kevin Durant scored 39 and James Harden scored 41. And there was no question who the best player on the floor was. And it wasn't KD and it wasn't James Harden, a pair of MVPs. It was Jason Tatum at 23 years old. Think about that.
Yeah, that's huge. And that's a bright spot for the Celtics in a series where I'm with you. I don't think they have any shot in this year. I think it's kind of been a wash. But at least you're getting performances from Tatum right now where you say, you know what, we actually do have something here moving forward. And I think that's a positive. The other thing I really liked last night, honestly, and it's something we really haven't seen a lot of this year, and it's been one of the big problems, is this team actually played with an edge.
They did.
Tristan Thompson had it. Grant Williams got into it with Kevin Durant a little bit there in the third quarter. Now, generally, you'd like someone that's actually, you know, good at basketball to kind of have that edge. That would be nice if they could find that mix. But just to see those guys play with that kind of heart is not something we've seen a lot of this year. And that's been, I think, one of the big problems for this team.
They showed a lot of fight, and they basically showed, hey, we're not going to be bullied by the Brooklyn Nets. We know you guys are more talented. You guys might feel like you're going to roll over us, but that's not going to happen. And I like that. I like that they use it. And I also like the fact that, you know, it's sort of weird to look at this box score here and see that Tristan Thompson was a minus 16 because I thought he was good. I thought he really took advantage of the fact that the Nets don't have a true center. Blake Griffin is Charmin soft at center. He doesn't want any of the physical stuff, doesn't want to rebound. And Claxton's a nice young guy, but he's on the skinnier side for a center. They don't really have a true center after moving on from Jared Allen. And when you look at that, you know, I thought Tristan Thompson really did a great job of taking advantage of that and gave the Celtics a big boost. And I also thought, you know, Evan Fournier, who had not been good in the first two games, he didn't light it up. He only took 12 shots, but he hit half of them, had some huge threes in the fourth quarter, scores 17 points. He was a guy who I thought made a difference and gave Jason Tatum just enough in terms of having another guy along with them, having that third guy along with Tatum and Smart so that they could win the game. I don't think they win that game if Fournier doesn't sort of step it up from where he had been in the first two games.
All right, 617-779-0985. Going to get to some of your phone calls here coming up after the break. I'm with you, though, Chris. Overall, that performance and the edge they played with, pretty exciting coming off that game, too, where I thought that they'd completely packed this thing up and the series was over. So we'll get into some of your phone calls here on Gasper and Murray coming up next on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
That's an aberration, which I freely admit.
It's Gasper and Murray.
I'm drunk, you're gross, let's go.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Is 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I mean, it's not my first time being an opponent in Boston. So, you know, I'm just looking forward to competing with my teammates. And, you know, hopefully we can just keep it strictly basketball. You know, there's no belligerence or any racism going on, subtle racism and people yelling from the crowd. But even if it is, it's part of the nature of the game, and we're just going to focus on what we can control.
Is it something you've experienced in Boston before?
I'm not the only one that could attest to this, but it's just, you know, it is what it is.
All right, Gasper and Murray, no Murray, Tim McCone in with Chris Gasper. That was Kyrie before Game 3. Welcome back to the Garden last night. Chris, what did you make of the reaction that the crowd gave Kyrie in his return?
Kudos to the crowd. I thought that they got on him in the right way. You know, booed him every time he touched the ball. Obviously had an effect on him and an effect on the game. And, you know, Kyrie seemed good with the way he was treated just from a basketball standpoint. So I think, you know, look, there's a way that you can be derisive and you can show some animus towards a player without it crossing the line, which unfortunately in the past that's happened here. It's happened in other places too. I'm not saying that Boston has a license or has the patent, the monopoly on that stuff, but I also feel like sometimes it happens everywhere is just a quick way to deflect and not deal with a pretty sordid racial history here when it comes to dealing with professional athletes and obviously and honestly dealing with people who aren't professional athletes. But I thought kudos to the crowd last night. You know, really good in terms of having an impact on the game and letting Kyrie know how you feel for abandoning the franchise, absconding from the Boston Celtics, but doing it in the right way.
Yeah, what has been your reaction to this story? Obviously, this has been the biggest thing going on this week so far. What did you make of Kyrie's comments when they first happened? And kind of the reaction from not only fans, but also the Celtics as a whole since then?
Yeah, I mean, so look, the way I look at it is this. You know, Kyrie certainly, I think when you bring something like that up, the gravity of that issue, you do have a responsibility to provide some more details. That being said, I understand that a lot of people don't like Kyrie Irving and that they question him as the messenger. But the reality is that doesn't mean you can ignore the message just because you don't like the messenger or you don't find the messenger to be perfect. Because after he said that stuff, you then had Marcus Smart and Tristan Thompson corroborate it pretty much immediately. So this shows you that this is happening, has been happening, is an issue for the Celtics and their fans, is an issue at TD Garden. And reputation can become reality. I think that that's an issue, obviously, for the Celtics. And again, like I said, I understand that Kyrie is an imperfect messenger. I agree with Jaylen Brown and the idea that I think there's an element of Kyrie raising this issue that was self-serving. But that doesn't mean that it's not a valid issue, that it's not a problem, that it's not something that needs to be addressed. And I also think that there's a bigger context here in terms of it's not just about maybe racially charged comments made to players on the court, which obviously is unacceptable. But it's what is it like when you are outside of the arena where you are recognizable and you're living in this area? What are you dealing with? Are you dealing with what Marcus Smart dealt with when he's leaving TD Garden and he's trying to help a woman who's crossing the street in an Isaiah Thomas jersey who might be about to get hit by a car with her child, and she fires back at him with the N-word because she doesn't know it's Marcus Smart? And that sort of shows you what people who are not professional athletes and are black people deal with in this area. And that's almost worse. Like, if she knew that was Marcus Smart, she wouldn't have said that. But because she thought that was just Joe Blow black guy, she thought it was okay to say. And if you think that doesn't enter the mind of players when they come here, what's my life going to be like off the court? It absolutely does. So I think that's something that needs to be remedied in this area. We've really had a racial reckoning, Tim, I think, in the country. But we can't just sort of go to the reflexive, well, this is a problem everywhere. It is. But the idea it's a problem everywhere and that it's a problem here and that it seems to, at least anecdotally, happen at a greater frequency here, and the feeling of the athletes is that it's more likely to happen here. Those two things, that it happens everywhere and that it's happening here in the athlete's mind at a greater frequency, they're not mutually exclusive. We can address them both. And I just want to go back to, you know, talking about off the court, Tim, and what life is like. I know this is 30 years ago, but 30 years ago is not as long ago as you really think. Dee Brown face down on the ground in Wellesley by police because they thought he was a bank robber. And I have the AP story from back then. And here's what Dee Brown said at the time. When you think of towns up north and you think of racism, you think of Boston. And I think that still resonates, that quote, for a lot of players in the NBA. And the Celtics and the city have to find a way to ameliorate that.
Yeah, so I'll be honest, I'm younger. I didn't even know that Dee Brown story until this week. I just kind of remember the dunk contest. That's pretty much my only memory of Dee Brown. So I thought that was wild. I think part of the issue, too, is that I think your natural reaction with anything is when you get kind of called out is to immediately get defensive.
Sure.
Especially when it's a situation where it's an athlete that kind of left and it seemed like it was an unprompted comment.
Yep.
And so, you know, you just go, whoa, well, I'm not racist. My friends aren't racist.
Yep.
Like, what are you talking
about?
And I think you just need to kind of take a step back and instead of getting defensive, actually, you know, listen to the message there.
Yep.
And I guess, you know, I'll go back to like last weekend with Ty Anderson. I love basketball. It's my favorite sport. I was not a hockey guy growing up. And I've gotten into it the last couple of years. But Ty is one of the best in the city with hockey. I'm not going to go on a show with Ty Anderson and tell him, yeah, you know, Ty, the thing is, what you don't understand is what the PK with the Washington Capitals is. And I think this is a situation like, hey, Tim, Irish guy from Worcester. You know, I think your experience or lack of experience with racism in Boston, probably not the go-to viewpoint for this topic either. So maybe just listen to the actual message. And to your point, when it's not just Kyrie, but it's being backed up by multiple people too, whether it's Marcus Smart, Tristan Thompson. Yeah, I think that there clearly is a message there that things do need to change. Yeah.
No, I mean, I agree with that. And I also subscribe to, you know, the message from Jaylen Brown. Not every Celtics fan is racist. We know that. Well, we understand that. Nobody's saying that every fan is. But again, you know, I'll just tell you big picture. There's some work to be done here. And again, there are things that can happen that are unfair in life. We all know that. Like I said, reputation can become reality, whether it's fair or not. And so this is a reputation Boston earned in the past. It might not be a fully accurate reputation now, but you have to take accountability for actions in the past. And I said this on Felger and Maz. You know, this is a city that loves to trade in and traffic in its history. It's all about the history every time, except for with this. When it comes to this, and when it comes to busing and racism and these other incidents, it's like, oh, no, that was so long ago. Like, why are you bringing that up? You can't bring that up. It's like you have to embrace your history for better and for worse. And there's a reason why the NBA All-Star Game, which is one of the signature events on the Black cultural calendar for entertainers, for athletes, for people who want to gather together and celebrate Black excellence and achievement, there's a reason it hasn't been here since 1964. Name me another new arena that hasn't hosted the All-Star Game.
That's a great point.
The TD Garden's been open since 1995. It's been open for 26 years. And you hear other stuff like the Celtics didn't apply for it, or we don't have the convention space. Well, we do now in the Seaport. We don't have the hotels. Well, we do now. I mean, the reason it hasn't been here is because there's fear about having it here. And I've heard this from people. Like, they don't think that they'll have a good time. They don't think it's a welcoming city to have that All-Star game. So you're not going to see that. And so that tells you. Now, you can argue whether that's right or not, or fair or not, but you have to deal with that perception because that has become the reality. So how do we make it better? So instead of fighting against that and having this sort of grievance culture of like, oh, you know, you're defaming me, you're calling me a racist, take all that energy and channel it into trying to improve that. And I think you're seeing that with the city of Boston. They have this new campaign, this tourism campaign, that it's called All Inclusive, right? And it's a pun. The idea is, you know, all inclusive, like you go to a resort, but also all inclusive as in we welcome everybody. And you see the city's trying to change that reputation. So I like to see that, obviously, at the municipal level. But I think at the fan level, again, instead of, you know, tilting against windmills and trying to call people out and saying, well, I've never heard this. I've never, you know, because the other thing, like, to be straight up with you, Tim, it's insulting as a Black person to basically say, like, hey, you know, this only really happened if you can get a white person to co-sign. Like, if a white person heard it or saw it, then it happened. Otherwise, I don't believe it happened. Like, to be honest, that's really insulting.
What did you make of Ainge's comments to Tutcher and Rich earlier this week?
Yeah, I thought they were tone deaf and off the mark. And I don't think that he meant it that way. I think that his idea was, I don't want to fuel this. I don't want to embrace this. I don't want to throw gasoline on the fire. Let's just keep it to basketball. But sort of the way it came off, I don't think was as artful as he intended. And I think that all you had to do is listen to his players, Marcus Smart and Tristan Thompson, guys who have dealt with that. And you know that there have been some incidents. I mean, I would be interested, you know, obviously Dennis Johnson passed away, but, you know, I'd be interested to hear what Robert Parrish has to say about it. You know, what did he have to deal with? You know, what did Max have to deal with? So I just sort of feel like I know what he was trying to do. I know what he meant. I think Danny has a good heart. You know, Danny is really like, this is kind of cliche, but like Danny is one of those people who doesn't really see color. And that's great, but not everybody is that way. And I feel like his answer, like I said, was off base and not artful, and frankly could come back to hurt the Celtics.
Yeah, I'm not sure how locked into that interview he was because, you know,
he was golfing
at the time. I think some of it too might have been the frustration with Kyrie and stuff like that in terms of him walking out.
Yeah.
And then you kind of get that shot. But at the same time too, you listen to the pregame coverage on ESPN last night, and whether it was Jay Williams talking about just the lack of empathy, which I think is legitimate in terms of that answer from Danny Ainge, and then Woj coming out and saying that across the NBA, people were kind of floored by those comments by Ainge, and that again, they were kind of tone deaf, makes you wonder long term if there's going to be ramifications from that as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it could be damaging. And I sort of, like, again, I'm not making excuses for Danny. I didn't like what he said or the way he said it. But I think you hit on something there that's really, really salient. And that's that Ainge and the Celtics have bent over backwards not to say anything negative about Kyrie. They really have. They've gone out of their way. I mean, here's a guy who left them at the altar, you know, led them on, went back on his word, whatever you want to say. And they've gone out of their way to talk about it was a positive experience, blah, blah, blah. Like, to the point that you're like, come on, man. Like, I don't believe any of this. They've gone out of their way to paint him in a positive light. And then Kyrie comes out. And again, the message, I think, is legitimate, but you can question the motivation of the timing of it being delivered. And even Jaylen Brown questioned that. He sort of goes out of his way to paint the Celtics and the city in the worst possible light. So I can understand the frustration from Danny Ainge there. But I think that, again, his answer needs to be better than that. It just has to be. And I hope it doesn't have long-term ramifications for the Celtics in terms of recruiting players, because they already have some issues that have nothing to do with race. It has, you know, the idea of that Danny can be kind of cutthroat. There was a feeling when Gordon Hayward left that Brad's not the best at balancing egos and being able to get high profile, highly talented players to sacrifice and mesh together. So these are all things, when you look at Horford leaving, when you look at Kyrie leaving, when you look at Hayward leaving, that the Celtics have to deal with. Now you throw this on top of it. That's not a good recipe for recruitment.
Yeah. 617-779-0985 is the telephone number. See you guys lined up. We will get to your phone calls next on Gasper and Murray after this.
This is Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Cakes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back here, 98.5, the Sports Hub. It is Gasper and Murray. Tim McCone in for Murray, 617-779-0985. We'll get to your calls right now. Let's go to Dre in Boston. Dre, what's going on?
Hey, hello.
Hey, Dre.
I just wanted to comment on just the whole aspect. It goes beyond, like, in the stadium.
And I think other people of other races might not understand that. Like, I'm a black man. Boston, I'm 34 years old, fairly young, but I can understand where players might not be comfortable here, because even as a black resident here, sometimes you may feel like, you know, the city's not for you, there's not nowhere for you to go, or you might, there's nowhere to hear your music, or you can't see this or that, or this actor or rap artist is not going to come to Boston because of so forth. You know what I mean? So I think it's a quality of life thing. Mm-hmm. And even, I'm a big Sports Hub fan. I've been listening to you guys 10 years now, but even diversity on, like, you guys and listening to you guys is not much. I love you guys. I love Felga. I love all you guys, but it doesn't cover exactly every demographic of the city. Like, you guys have a lot of young people that listen, a lot of African-Americans that listen, but sometimes it just doesn't feel welcoming. And that's not on purpose, and I understand that. So I think a lot of players probably feel the same way.
No, I mean, I think everything you said is legitimate in terms of, you know, what the reality is for people. And I think that's the tough part for people to understand. You know, I think demographically, there's a difference between a place being welcoming, not being a place where you have to deal with racism, and that place also being sort of fully integrated and embracing your culture. And it might not even be intentional, but I think what he's saying is like the experience for a lot of, you know, black people in Boston. I mean, I didn't grow up in Boston. I grew up in Lynn, but I'm from the area. And I'll tell you that, you know, as a black male, that it's just different. Like you go to a lot of places, you know, you go to the Seaport, you go to Newbury Street, and it's just not diverse. That doesn't mean that it's like racist or that there's like intentional segregation. What I've always said here is there's like social segregation that exists in Boston that you don't see necessarily in some of the other major cities. You know, there is a strong, proud black community here, but it tends to be sort of isolated in certain neighborhoods, and it's not as visible if you're in the North End. It's not like it's a very, you know, heterogeneous mix of people, or Newbury, or, you know, the Seaport. All these sort of destination places tend to be overwhelmingly one demographic. And that does become, to Dre's point, a quality of life issue for a lot of young black professionals, male, female, in sports, outside of sports.
So when you hear Kyrie talk about it, you hear Durant chime in on that question, you hear some of the Celtics and their responses, do you think big picture in terms of Boston trying to recruit some free agents maybe moving forward that this might be an issue down the road?
It could be. I mean, it was an issue when they wanted to bring Kevin Garnett in. He was hesitant.
That's a really good
point.
But
then he got here and he loved it. Yeah. I mean, he loved it here. It was great. It was great for him. It was great for the city. So I think a lot of times it's not like once guys get here, I think they tend to really have overwhelmingly positive experiences. I mean, there are exceptions. I think David Price would be one of those. But I think a lot of times it's more about the perception or the reputation. And they say, oh, I don't know if I want to go there because I've heard this, I've heard that, or I've dealt with this, I've dealt with that as a visiting player. But then they get here and they really like it. So it's just sort of trying to be able to overcome that initial reluctance and that reputation issue that goes on. And I think, and to be honest with you, this is just my opinion. You know, I can't be a spokesperson, obviously, Tim, for everyone. But what I can say is that in a lot of ways, the instant pushback you get to any sort of instance of racism that you're bringing up and saying, hey, this happened, that's almost as bad, almost as bad as the actual incidences themselves, because it basically says, we don't believe you. This isn't welcoming. Like that, how reflexive and how fast and how quick the pushback is just reinforces the reputation and the idea that like this is a place that's not friendly.
617-779-0985. Let's go talk to Andrew in Beverly. Andrew.
Yeah, Gaspar, I got to take you to task a little bit.
Sure.
To your point, I mean, the messenger, in my opinion, is what makes this issue, unfortunately, it pulls a lot of validity away from it. Having Kyrie, you know, be the mouthpiece of this issue, I think is really unfortunate, because I just do not find him to be a good spokesperson for this issue. And that may be a really unfair observation.
It's not unfair. I mean, it's a luxury you have with not having to deal with the issue that you can feel that way, but I don't think it's unfair.
Well, I the other, and we can disagree to or agree to disagree on that, but I think the other thing is, you know, I grew up in New York and my wife is from Cleveland, and to think that nothing has really changed in Boston and metropolitan Boston in the last 20, 30 years, that's just not true. It's just not.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's saying it. No one's saying it hasn't changed, but I think the idea that it doesn't exist at all anymore, you would say that that's just not true, too.
Well, I don't think anybody would say that in any major metropolitan city. So, look, there are, you know, everyone's got to recognize there are jackasses in every, you know, they're everywhere.
Yes.
It is what it is. And, again, having Kyrie, the way that he did this, there would have been a lot better people, in my opinion, to bring up this issue who would have had a lot more.
Sure.
I think, you know, again, their comments would have been validated a little bit more. He's a deflector, and I think everyone recognizes that.
So let me ask you this.
Oh, you let him go.
Okay. Yeah,
that.
That's okay, because I did want – I just want – so that's exactly what I was saying at the beginning. I think it's easy for people to dismiss the message – because they don't like the messenger. And I sort of understand it. What I was going to ask him, though, is, well, what about Marcus Smart and Tristan Thompson and what they said afterwards?
Right.
So you just ignore that? That doesn't matter? That doesn't count? So that's sort of my – that was going to be my question to him. So, you know, I – and by the way, I don't think he took me to task. I thought we had a good discussion. But to keep it going, that's my question to anybody out there that feels the way Andrew feels. Yeah, I agree. Kyrie was an imperfect person to bring this up. And I think the way he brought it up, there was an element of it being self-serving to it. But then once it comes up and we start having the discussion and it starts being reinforced, now what?
Right. Those aren't mutually exclusive things.
Yeah.
I agree. 617-779-0985. Let's talk to Scott in New Hampshire. Scott.
Oh, listening. Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Thanks. Good.
All right. I've been listening to the, you know, the conversation, and as I had spoken earlier, I guess I get the message, but I guess we're not answering the question. Like, what do we do to fix the issue? How do we work as Americans, as people, not of color or whatever race, we just come together? How do we do that?
It's a great question, and I wish I had the answer. I really do. I would say the first thing is, you know, just be an advocate. I mean, if anybody sees this type of behavior going on, not just in the arena, you know, just in general, like, speak up and speak out. And say, you know, hey, that's not right. Like, you can't say that to that person, or you can't do that. And I think we live in a society where people are sort of loath to get involved and interject. And I understand that. You never know what could happen. But, you know, make sure we've had this discussion, at least, you know, people in the Black community do. And it's cool. Like, we appreciate people who are against racism. But it also helps if you just aren't, you know, anti-racism, if you're pro, like, proactively rooting it out, you know, being an advocate, that makes a huge, huge difference. I think that's part of it. And I think just for the city in general, you're starting to see some of the great, you know, changes that you see, like this mayoral race that's coming up. How many candidates of color are in this mayoral race? I think that that's really great in terms of changing the perception of the city and just making sure that, you know, we all work together more. Now, we're getting pretty far afield from sports.
Like, yeah.
I'm sort of getting out, like, in an area where I am not an expert by any means. But, yeah, I think there's a lot of work, obviously, for all of us to do.
All right, let's sneak in one more call here before we go to break. Let's talk to Joe and Lincoln. Joe.
Yeah, I called to talk about the game, believe it or not. But first, just a quick thing. I grew up in Chicago, which is much more closely bound to numbers in terms of races. And Black culture was everywhere, Black music and just a part of our lives. And moving to Boston, I don't, just like that other guy said, I don't feel any Black presence at all in terms of influencing the whole culture. So that's just a quick aside about that, and echoing really what Chris said. But can I talk about the game?
Yeah, absolutely. Would love to.
Okay, so I did not look forward to watching that game. I just did it like an obligation. In fact, reminded me in 2004 when I watched the Red Sox and they were down 3-0 to the Yankees. I thought there was no shot. They've been slaughtered so badly every time I saw them against Brooklyn. I said, they just don't belong on the court. And I was so proud, even without Jaylen Brown, to show that they do belong on the same court, and they could, and the Brooklyn guys are not infallible. And, you know, I do think one quick thing about Kyrie. I thought if Gordon Hayward hadn't been hurt and Kyrie could have been the second banana, he might have done really well here. And there were some times I saw him in Hayward on the court where I thought he did play much better, but you're right. He cannot be the alpha guy. He just can't be.
No, it's just not his nature.
And I'm looking forward to the rest of the series. I'm really hoping that Kemba just really killed me. But, you know, if he starts making shots, that will make a big difference. And Tatum, I think the big thing about Tatum, he's not scared anymore. He's got much more confidence, and the team has confidence. They're not going to win, probably, but so what? I want him to just give effort. Unless I can't. Perkins, I think Perkins is the 12th man on the bench. In any way they can get him as a player, just to slap Marcus Smart and Jason Tatum around once in a while, they need something like that.
They are not going to win the series. It's probably not going to win. They are not going to win the series. But that was a nice performance and a game where I thought the Celtics were going to come in and lay down. I really didn't expect much from Boston,
especially when they were down
that game too.
Yeah, 19-4.
And in that first quarter, I was like, "Well, this was fun. Good start." Yeah, it was.
I love the fight. They showed some. And, you know, Danny's big on resolve. They showed some resolve, which they have not always shown this year. They have shown it a lot. You know, they come back and it's kind of close at the end. But this was one where they showed resolve early. They didn't wait, because they knew they couldn't. They got desperate, and they played with, I'll use a scal word, force. They started taking it to the rim. They were forceful in their intentions, and it made a huge difference. So I think if you're a Celtic fan, you know, that's a night to be proud all around. The way the team played on the court, the way the fans conducted themselves in the stands, I think it was a great night for the Boston Celtics.
All right, 617-779-0985 is the telephone number. It is Gasper and Murray. Tim McCone in for Murray. We'll get to some of your calls and continue the Celtics conversation coming up next on 98.5.
Chris Gasper, Big Jim Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Chris Gasper. Woo! Jim Murray.
Give me fuel, give me fire.
Give me that which I desire.
It's Gasper and Murray. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, back here, 98.5, The Sports Hub. Couple more minutes before Hub headlines, and then we don't exactly switch gears, but we go into the 98.5, The Sports Hub Celtics show. So we'll continue to talk Celtics. There are some game notes. I'm going to go glass half full, by the way.
Yeah.
I think long term, as bad as this season has been, and you look at it and you're like, I'm not sure what moves there are for the Celtics moving forward, because you kind of have these two young all-stars, and outside of that, like, what's the next move when Kemba's knee's shot and really Marcus Smart's kind of your only chip moving forward? I look at what the Sixers did this year, and if you have two young, legitimate all-stars like the Celtics do, you can make some minor moves, again, like Philadelphia did, and go from a team that got swept by the Celtics last year to a team that's the first in the East, and, you know, you made some more moves that fit those two guys better, and you can kind of revamp the team without getting rid of, you know, those main all-star players that you already have on your roster.
I guess my question to you would be this: who's the Tobias Harris?
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue, right? Because yeah, it probably should be Kemba Walker, and I'm not sure it's going
to
be.
Is it Fournier? I mean, that's the biggest decision to me they're going to have to make this offseason, is do they re-sign Fournier or do they let him go? And that all, you know, sort of feeds into the trade exception and the Gordon Hayward thing and how that all goes down. But do they re-sign him? Because once you re-sign him, now you're, like, really locked in.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, that's your core. I would not be surprised if they move Marcus Smart. And I think one of the real pluses of this series, win or lose, has been how well Smart has played. And maybe they can pawn him off to some other team that will give them something back. Maybe I always bring this up. I look at the Hawks. Like, that's a team that could use a little more edge. And now that DeAndre Hunter's back, they have Hunter, they have Bogdanovich, they have Kevin Huerter. They have some guys who are kind of redundant. And maybe you can siphon off one of those guys, make a deal with Smart, send him to Atlanta, and get somebody back who is younger and has more upside, or, in the case of Bogdanovich, is closer to what Gordon Hayward gave you than what Fournier is.
Yeah, so I'm with you, because I look at Smart, and, you know, we talk about analytics with baseball so much, and we don't really talk about it in the NBA, but it's huge now. It's huge in the NBA, and you look at Smart, and, yeah, you can sell him as kind of like the ultimate dirt dog for basketball.
Yep.
Ultimately, he's a guard that shoots 32% from three, so that's kind of a tough sell for guys that are big into analytics. But to your point, I think this, and especially last night, kind of showcases what he can do for you for another organization. So if you're going to move a piece, he does seem like the most logical one if you're trying to really reset this thing.
And he is going into the last year of his contract. Yep. So that actually adds more value to him, because whatever team you move him to, it's an expiring deal. So if they decide they don't want to be in the Marcus Smart business, well, then he moves on and you clear a little bit of cap room. So again, let's say you're Atlanta, right? And you've signed Gallinari and Bogdanovich to these long-term deals, these four-year deals. Well, if you trade for Marcus Smart, now suddenly you're getting out from under, you know, an extra 2 years on a deal. Like, Bogdanovich is 4 years, $72 million. He's making $18 million a year. So if you can get out from under that, that maybe gives you a little more flexibility moving forward as you try and build a contender.
That's a great point. 617-779-0985. Let's sneak in one more call here before Hub headlines. Let's go to Bishop in New Jersey. Bishop, what's on your mind?
Yes. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
just want to talk on something that Jasper, I want to pick up on something that Jasper mentioned earlier, as the city is trying to change its perception in regards to the diversity as a candidate. Talk about the politics, as some of the candidates are now running as minorities and black.
Yes.
So my suggestion is that for the sports, is that maybe the Celtics should get a director of sports relations, and then a minority at that case. And that individual could then go reach out to take surveys of the different athletes in the NBA and poll them and see what they think about the city and get some input from them. What could the city do that will make an attraction for minorities as free agents or whatever, recruits, to come to the city? That would be number one. Number two, I think we need some diversity. I look around. I've been a Celtics fan since 59. I look at your sports talk show. I don't see too many minorities. Now I see that you have Abby. Okay, that's good. Yep. And you have the other Mina. That's great. So you have the females. So that's great. So you need some more minorities. I look around. I see Fagner. I see Mad. I see Murray. But I don't see no minorities when I look at that studio. So you need to start working there. Then so far as the team, I think Wick needs to get rid of Danny and bring in a minority as your general manager. And you need to bring some more minority from the NBA or past coaches to work with Brad, because Brad's system is not good for his players like Jason and Jalen. So that's my suggestion. I think they need to start working on that, and then maybe we'll see some changes in
different
thoughts about. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Yeah. I mean, I think whoever the coach or the general manager is, I hope it's somebody who's qualified for the job. You know, I don't want to get into let's just hire a coach. I mean, Casey Jones was a very good coach here. Bill Russell was coach. So, I mean, there have been, African-American coaches before. ML Carr was a coach. He was terrible. So was Rick Pitino. Rick Pitino sucked, too. So, I mean, I don't think anybody has a monopoly on being good or being
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.